I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Haven't seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
It is the KSL Greenhouse Show. Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos this morning as Maria is enjoying a day away, and we decided to have a party while Maria was gone. Not only do we have Tom Bettis, who expect to have here, but Mike Caron and JD Gunnell from the Extension have also joined us today. We have a huge brain trust, so this is a great...
Well, it's probably not as large as you think.
Well, it's a lot larger than mine, so...
Our brains are melting and leaking out our noses, and...
But it's a lot of fun to have you guys here. Thanks for joining us today, and we promised, we've been teasing this a little bit this morning to talk about the tomato issues that seem to be so pervasive around the Wasatch Front this year, and I'm not alone. I've had some issues with mine, and they just, for me, it's, you know, it's not curly top, but we do have that leaf curling issue, and I even showed it to Ton, and he said it looked kind of like it was overspray from, I don't know, what'd you say, 240 or something? And so I got that going on, but just in general, they just don't seem to be doing as well this year as they normally do. Size-wise, the ones that are doing well aren't doing as well as I'd normally expect to see them. So, I mean, it's a warm summer, but...
Well, I, especially up in the colder climates, I've planted my tomatoes 3 times this spring. We had those really nice rainstorms in May, but we also froze a couple times really hard, clear through the 1st of June, so... I'm kind of behind the gun as it is, just starting over multiple times. But after those few really strategically placed rainstorms that did really well, we went straight to the 90s. And young plants that are transplanted, they have a really hard time adjusting quickly like that. And we've experienced that even with woody plants and trees and shrubs in the fall, having these extreme temperature swings, and plants have a really hard time with that. So, yes, typically we have some of these curly top, and we always have chemical issues, but more and more we're seeing really weird stuff. So we've actually taken some samples to Claudia Nischwitz, our pathologist on campus, and Mike was just talking about some of the things he's found.
Yeah, we've taken samples from growers and homeowners throughout Utah County, and we're seeing kind of some widespread problems that a lot of them seem to be linked to one variety, Roma. We found that most of the
problems, Roma types, San Marzanos, Roma types, Amish paste. Yeah.
So the samples that we've submitted to the lab came back negative for curly top virus, but they're potentially finding that there might be some other pathogens, some root pathogens. And so one of the speculations, one of the ideas that I've had about this is that perhaps there might have been some contaminated seed coming from some large bulk suppliers, which then divvy that out to a lot of small suppliers. So that people are really buying seed from different companies, but ultimately the seed is coming from the same company in the beginning. And so
there's only
a
few breeders of vegetables out there, vegetable seeds.
Yeah, and you kind of just spread the wealth.
Yeah. So we're still trying to figure that out, but it is a widespread problem that we're seeing more abundant this year.
And we're not saying it is the seed distributors at this point. It's speculation. And so we don't want people calling their garden centers and things saying, you sold me bad seed. We don't know for sure, but it's looking like it's something like that.
Well, and then you throw in overwatering like most homeowners do. you introduce some of those pathogens that are just there. Even in the soils, we have a lot of
Yeah, and that's true. And even if we say, well, the seeds may have come with some pathogen on them, that's actually pretty normal because just because these pathogens are everywhere in the environment. And so they're here in our soils, and it takes the right conditions for them to really become active enough to where they can infect plants. So either water stress on both ends of the spectrum, too much water, too little water, high heat,
with
you know, those kinds of things.
What we're seeing from Sheridan Hansen, who's on the show next week, she sent some samples up that I haven't heard back what they found on them. But what we're seeing is anywhere from Box Elder County down to Nephi. And so I think that besides overwatering, underwatering, there's something else going on that we still haven't found yet.
Yeah.
It is definitely something that's unusual.
Well, and they're living organisms.
They are.
It's like Mike said, there's things out there ready to pounce, just waiting for that right environment and maybe this high heat.
And it's hard to you know, pin any one thing on it. But to me, one of the other things that comes to mind when we talk about this is diversity in the garden. We talk about diversity in the landscape, but also diversity in our vegetable gardens. And so trying different kinds of tomatoes, those kinds of things, and not putting all of the varieties kind of in as one variety. And so because most of the problems we've seen, like we said, are kind of geared towards one type of tomato and a lot of times one variety of tomato. So growing more of a wide range of crops. And I know a lot of people are like, well, I have to have the Romas, for example, because they're the ones I use for canning. And there's other ones out there. And so this might be the initiative or the push to, you know, try some new ones.
Yeah, we have been seeing it in Romas about twice as much as other tomato varieties. Another one I've seen it more in is Early Girl. And I'm not sure if there's any genetics there related, but at least in Utah and Juab counties, it seemed to start in the Romas and then spread to others. And I've been telling people, if you see a diseased tomato, pull it out. You're not going to salvage it. Once you get a fungal disease in it, and I'm not talking powdery mildew, but if you have an internal fungal disease, internal bacterial or viral disease, there is nothing you can do to get it out. And that's when you take the great equalizer shovel out there and just yank them out, because you don't want, if there's something in there that can be spread by insect pests, you don't want it hopping to your healthy plants.
Well, and fungicides too, if there are root rot issues, a lot of times those are environmentally driven or culturally driven through like irrigation management or salt management in the soil. If the soil is too salty, that can cause, you know, problems with those diseases getting a foothold as well. So it's just kind of those different things to keep in mind.
In my case, I'm using drip irrigation and I'm celebrities. So I don't know that any variety's immune here. It kind of sounds like it's pervasive and somewhat random, and it's not.
Yeah, I planted 14 tomato plants and I wondered what I was going to do with them all, and I'm down to 5. The 5 or 6 I have are relatively healthy, but you know, Sheridan mentioned that she noticed that it seemed like that tomatoes that were covered with hoops had less of it in it than tomatoes that weren't. And she was wondering maybe if there was a combination of things, that something was being spread by insects and they skipped over the ones with hoops. I don't know. There's a lot of speculation right now. We realize there's a problem and there could be all sorts of things going on.
Or stress related, if the hoops provided, say, a little bit of relief from sunlight, and so the plant's temperatures were moderated, or, you know.
But ultimately, Tom nailed it. If your tomato is sick and not growing and kind of wilted, regardless of what it could be, rip it out and get it out of the garden so it doesn't spread to further plants. And it's not like the roots and the water is going to spread it. Usually it's by insects, aphids or thrips.
Yeah, and if it's spread through the roots, you're probably overwatering. So I was in the Genoa area last Sunday. I was going on a drive, and in the middle of the orchards, there's about, I think, an acre plot just full of peppers and tomatoes. And I looked at the tomatoes gorgeous initially, but when I stopped and looked, I noticed about a third of the tomatoes were infected. It didn't seem to be as has progressed as far as others, but the peppers were perfectly fine. And so whatever it is at least it initially looks like it's just hitting tomatoes.
I just had a neighbor of mine text in and say this is really interesting because he hasn't had any problems with his tomatoes in his high tunnels.
Yeah, and so it very well could be that the protection from the high tunnels is helping, or it's excluding something spreading a disease.
Yeah, and if it is the curly top virus, there are tests that the scientists use to isolate.
There's tests you can get.
They're expensive for homeowners.
They're super expensive, and the weird thing about those is because those tests generally can get you down to what they call kind of a class of viruses, like the topoviruses and things like that. So they're not necessarily specific to, say, curly top virus, but usually if we detect virus presence, if we use those tests, we generally say, well, it's curly top or a curly top type virus, and they're gonna be pretty similar.
Yeah, so I just wanted to point out that there are tests.
There are tests out there.
But behind the curtain science.
With these tests, even though you know what disease it is in tomatoes, the solution is to yank them.
Yeah, exactly. There's no cure for viruses. And remember, too, if we do have root rot issues, then we have seen that fungicides aren't generally curative in gardens and landscapes. They're more preventive, and so once they've got a root rot fungus established, a lot of times there's no saving, especially on annuals.
This is fascinating. I think we could talk about it all morning long, and I'm sure we might revisit it once or twice, but we do need to jump out and take a break right now. If you have a question for the Brain Trust here, we are here for you, so give us a call. KSL Talk is the number, and you can call in, and we'll try and help you out. In the meantime, we're going to take a break right now. On the other side of the break, we'll be back with more on The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
It's the KSL Greenhouse Show. Thanks for joining us today. We are back with more. And, Ton, we've gone the whole morning. I haven't really done too much with text, so maybe we should do that right now. I've got a few here. Jana texted in and said that she's never lost a tomato until this year. And then she's lost 15 out of 28 so far.
I think it's the tomato grim reaper.
She says most started from seed, some bought from community gardens and other growers. It's indiscriminate on grower and variety. She said some have survived, yet one in the middle has died. It does impact my squash. Doesn't impact my squash or peppers. So this seems to be all over the place.
And Monday or Tuesday, we're going to have to call Colorado Extension in Idaho and see if they're seeing the same thing in those states to see if this is a regional thing. If it is, then it's probably the seed source. Because we're seeing tomatoes go down from many different growers. I grew a lot on my own that are going down. There's some from local garden centers. It's just, like I said, it's indiscriminate of where they came from.
Okay, another text. I have purple leaf sand cherry that is well established. Been there for 8 years. It's turning yellow and splotchy. Water is the same as it has always been. East-facing area. This is in Harriman.
Yeah, this one is probably the purple leaf sand cherry grim reaper.
That's your go-to now?
Yes.
It sounds kind of like an iron deficiency to me. You could also have a little bit of carinium blight with the speckled comment.
And remember that these ornamental types of fruit trees are going to be subject to the same diseases and pests that we see on the fruiting trees, like the fruiting cherries. So ornamental cherries of all kinds will get carinium blight. It's definitely a possibility. And it's also really prone to iron chlorosis, and it can be worse in some years than other years, especially if it's been more stressed this year, for example.
So here's one that you may not have seen. I wanted to get in before we take calls. And it says, is it a good idea to spray diluted household ammonia on your lawn?
Oh, boy.
Going back to Jerry Baker stuff.
That's a hard pass.
Yeah. No.
If it weren't for soil microorganisms, ammonia would kill your lawn because it's toxic, but the soil microorganisms break it down.
Convert it.
And convert it to eventually nitrogen that can be uptaken by the plants. Yeah. But there's a recipe floating around that I think involves ammonia, shampoo,
beer.
I mean, so, yeah, maybe it works and you've done all this work to mix it yourself, but you're wasting good beer.
That's a lot more expensive.
Yeah, and I say that in tongue in cheek, but by the time you buy all the crap and to put into this mix, you may as well just bought a bag of fertilizer because it'd be cheaper.
Yeah, and not necessarily any healthier for the environment or any safer, because ammonia is, if household ammonia is coming from the same manufacturing processes that fertilizer is coming from. It's the same processes to get the nitrogen out of the air to put it in household cleaners as it is to put it in fertilizer. So,
and the thing that floors me is what makes people think that ammonia is any safer than fertilizer? The fertilizer is much safer than handling that ammonia.
Yeah, what's more appealing about ammonia? Yeah.
It's the social media effect.
Social
ammonia
media effect.
Is so toxic.
There was this, I won't even call him a gardener. There was this huckster in the 90s.
That's rough.
Are you calling me out right
now? No, I'm calling out the PBS huckster that was on during their fun drives that would, I mean, he was just folksy. Yeah, you do this and you do that and you mix this. And he had all these homebrew remedies for things in your garden that weren't research-based, they weren't approved by the EPA, and they were far more toxic than any chemical that you could buy off the shelf. I mean, one of them involved boiling chew, like tobacco. And you then would get this pot full of chew water and filter it and then dilute it down to about 40 gallons of water. But if you ingested this water, it would kill you.
Well, nicotine's one of the most toxic chemicals out there.
And it's been banned. It was a popular
insecticide. Yeah, he was promoting it as this homebrew natural remedy to get over on the man because you're not buying these chemicals, and it was far more deadly.
Oh, yeah.
And so
and more costly, I'm sure.
Yes.
Well, as fascinating as that is, I'm afraid we're going to have to revisit this on the other side of news.
I like your honesty.
We have a call.
We do. Carol is waiting in Orem, and we're going to get to your call on the other side of the break here, Carol. And if you have a question, KSL Talk is the line. We're going to break now and come back with more of the Greenhouse Show on the other side of news and traffic.
Let's dig around town with KSL Greenhouse.
Dig Around Town is brought to you by Utah State University Extension. Check out monthly gardening tips and online gardening courses at garden.usu.edu. The Utah Iris Society is holding its annual plant sale today from 10 to 2 at the Sugar House Park Garden Center on the northeast corner of Sugar House Park. There will be a large selection of registered iris types, colors, and cultivars. Join USU's experts in their newly installed pollinator garden and explore plants that bloom across the growing season to help feed and create habitat for a variety of pollinators. The class will be held on Wednesday, July 27th from 6 to 8. Register at extension.usu.edu. Learn how to manage shady landscapes with Weber Basin Water on Wednesday evening, August 3rd. Shade can create some of the best environments for some amazing plants that are interesting and colorful. Sign up at WeberBasin.com. Now we'll look at this week's quick tip.
It's been too hot. With the temperatures having been above 100 degrees for the last several days, many people are worried about their newly planted trees and shrubs. As long as they're planted correctly and in the right locations, the trees and shrubs should be just fine, though. For the first few months, trees and shrubs need to be watered around 3 times a week if you have a loamy or clay soil. If you have a sandy soil, they should probably be watered 4 times a week. Remember not to overwater, though, because that's the number one way we kill these expensive trees and shrubs in our landscapes the first year they are planted.
You can also find the Dig Around Town calendar and more fun gardening info at KSLNewsRadio.com/greenhouse.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.